little circles in the head of her pint. Rugby Boy's eyes popped. His mouth fell open. He got his ankles tangled in a stool, and half his pints went down someone's back. "Now," Rosie said, giving him the finger and forgetting about him. "Did you get them?" I put a hand into my coat, slung over the arm of the seat where I could keep an eye on it, and found the envelope. "There," I said. "All ours." And I found out two tickets and laid them on the banged-up wooden table between us. Dunleary, Holyhead, departing 6:30 a.m., Monday, 16 December. Please arrive at least 30 minutes before departure. The sight of them made my adrenaline spike all over again. The breath went out of Rosie in an amazed little laugh. I said, "I thought the early boat was better. We could have had the overnight one, but it'd be harder to get our stuff and get away in the evening. This way, we can head out to the harbour on Sunday night, whenever we get a chance, and then wait there till it's time, yeah?"
"God," Rosie said after a moment, still breathless. "My God, I feel like we should be."
Her arm curved around the tickets, shielding them from the people at the next tables.
"You know..."
I wove my fingers through hers. "We're all right here. We've never seen anyone we know, have we?
It's still Dublin. I won't feel safe till that ferry's out of Dunleary. Put them away, will you?"
"Will you look after them? My ma goes through our stuff." Rosie grinned, not surprised. "I wouldn't be surprised if my da goes through mine as well, but he won't touch the knicker drawer. Give us those."
She picked up the tickets like they were made of fine lace, slid them carefully into the envelope, and tucked it into the top pocket of her jeans jacket. Her fingers stayed there for a moment, over her breast.
"Wow. 9 days, and then..."
"And then," I said, lifting my pint, "here's to you and me and our new life." We clinked glasses and took a drink, and I kissed her. The pint was top-notch. The warmth of the pub was starting to thaw out my feet after the walk through town. There was tinsel draped over the picture frames on the walls, and the bunch of students at the next table burst into loud, tipsy laughter. I should have been the happiest camper in the whole pub, but the evening still had that precarious feel to it, like a brilliant, sparkly dream that could turn nasty in a blink. I let Rosie go because I was afraid I was going to kiss her hard enough to hurt.
"We'll have to meet late," she said, hooking one knee over mine. "Midnight or after. My dad doesn't go to bed till 11, and I'll have to give him a while to go asleep."
"My lot are conked out by 10:30 on a Sunday. Sometimes Shay stays out late, but as long as I don't run into him on his way in, no problem. Even if I do, he won't stop us. He'll be delighted to see the back of me."
Rosie flicked an eyebrow and took another swig of her pint.
I said, "I'll head out by midnight. If it takes you a little longer, no bother."
She nodded.
"Shouldn't be much later. The last bus will be gone, though. Are you up for walking to Dunleary?"
"Not carrying all our stuff. By the time we got to the boat, we'd be dead on our feet.
It'll have to be a taxi."
She gave me an impressed look that was only half put on.
"La-dee-da!"
I grinned and wound one of her curls around my finger. "I've a couple of more Nixers coming up this week. I'll have the cash.
Nothing but the best for my girl. I'd get you a limo if I could, but that'll have to wait. Maybe for your birthday, yeah?"
She smiled back, but it was an absent smile. She wasn't in the mood for messing.
"Meet at number 16?
I shook my head. "The Shaughnessys have been hanging out there a lot the last while. I don't fancy running into them."
The Shaughnessy brothers were harmless, but they were also loud and thick and mostly stoned, and it would take way too long to get it through their heads why they needed to shut up and pretend they hadn't seen us.
"Top of the road."
"We'll get seen."
"Not after midnight on Sunday. Who'll be out except us and the Shaughnessy idiots?
All it'll take is one person, and anyway, what if it's raining?"
This wasn't like Rosie, this kind of edginess. Mostly she didn't know what nerves were.
I said, "We don't have to settle it now.
We'll see how the weather's shaping up next week. Decide then."
Rosie shook her head.
"We shouldn't meet up again. Not till we go. I don't want my dad getting suspicious."
"If he hasn't by now..."
I know, I just... God, Francis, those tickets.
Her hand went back to her pocket.
It's this close to real. I don't want us relaxing, even for a second, in case something goes wrong.
Like what?
I don't know. Someone stopping us.
No one's going to stop us.
Yeah,
Rosie said.
She bit down on her fingernail, and for a second her eyes slipped away from mine.
I know. We'll be grand.
I said,
what's up?
Nothing. Let's meet up at the top of the road, like you said, unless it's lashing rain. Then we'll go for number 16. The lads won't be out if the weather's awful, yeah?
Yeah, I said.
Rosie, look at me. Are you feeling guilty about this?
One corner of her mouth twisted wryly.
I am in my arse.
It's not like we're doing it just for the laugh.
If my da hadn't acted like such a bleeding muppet about the whole thing, we'd never have thought of this.
Why? Are you?
Not a chance. Kevin and Jackie are the only ones who'll miss me. I'll send them something nice out of my first wages. They'll be delighted.
Are you going to miss your family? Is that it?
Or the girls?
She thought about that for a moment.
The girls, yeah, I am. And my family, a bit. But sure, I've known for ages that I'd be moving out soon enough. Before we even left school, me and Imelda were talking about maybe heading to London ourselves. Up until...
A fleeting sideways grin to me.
Up until you and me came up with a better plan. Whatever happened, I'd say sooner or later I'd have been gone. Wouldn't you?
She knew better than to ask whether I'd miss my family.
Yeah, I said. I wasn't sure whether it was true or not, but... It was what both of us needed to hear.
I'd have been out of here one way or the other. I like this way a lot, though.
That flicker of a smile again. Still not a whole one.
Same here.
I asked, then what's up? Ever since you sat down, you've been acting like that seat's itching the arse off you.
That got Rosie's full attention.
Look who's talking. You're a laugh a minute tonight, so you are. It's like going out with Oscar the Bleeding Grouch.
I'm up to 90, 'cause you're up to 90.
I thought you'd be over the moon about the tickets, and instead, bollocks! You got here like that. You were only dying for a chance to punch the head off that pathetic Egypt.
And so did you.
Are you having second thoughts? Is that what this is about? If you're trying to break it off with me, Francis Mackey, you act like a man and do it yourself. Don't you try to make me do your dirty work.
We glared at each other for a second, balanced on the edge of a flat-out row. Then Rosie let out her breath and slumped back on the bench and pushed her hands through her hair.
She said, I'll tell you what it is, Francis. The pair of us are nervous because we're after getting above ourselves.
I said, speak for yourself.
I am doing. Here's us wanting to head off to London and take on the music industry, no less. No more factories for us, thanks very much, not our style. We're going to be working for rock bands. What would your mammy say to you if she knew?
She'd want to know who the bloody hell do I think I am. Then she'd give me a clatter round the ear, call me a feckin' simpleton, and tell me to get a hold of myself. It'd be loud.
And that, Rosie said, raising her pint to me, that's why we're up to 90, Francis. Just about everyone we've ever known in our whole lives would say the same thing. They'd say we're getting above ourselves. If we fall for that shite, we'll only end up giving out to each other and making each other miserable. So we need to cop onto ourselves rapid, yeah?
Secretly, I still get proud of the ways Rosie and I loved each other. We had no one else to learn from. None of our parents were shining examples of relationship success. So we learned this from each other. When someone you love needs you to, you can get hold of your five-alarm temper, get hold of the shapeless things that scare you senseless, act like an adult instead of the Cro-Magnon teenager you are. You can do a million things you never saw coming.
I said,
come here.
I slid my hands up Rosie's arms and cupped her cheeks, and she leaned forward and tipped her forehead against mine so that the rest of the world vanished behind the bright, heavy tangle of her hair.
You're dead right. I'm sorry I was a bollocks.
We might make an arse of this, but there's no reason we shouldn't give it our best shot.
I said, you're a smart woman. Do you know that?
Rosie watched me. Close enough that I could see the gold flecks in the green of her eyes, the tiny crinkles at the corners where she was starting to smile. "Nothing but the best for my fella," she said.
This time, I kissed her properly. I could feel the tickets pressed between my wild heartbeat and hers, and I felt like they were fizzing and crackling, ready to explode any second into a ceiling-high shower of gold sparks. That was when the evening fell into place and stopped smelling of danger. That was the moment when that riptide started rising inside me, like a shiver deep in my bones. From that second on, all I could do was go with its pull and believe it would lead us right, draw our feet through the tricky currents and over the wicked drops to all the safe stepping stones. When we separated a little later, Rosie said, "You're not the only one that's been busy. I went into Eason's and looked through all the ads in the English newspapers."
"Any jobs?"
"Some. Mostly stuff we can't do, forklift drivers and substitute teachers. But there's a few for waitresses and bar staff. We can say we've got experience, they'll never check. No one wanting people to do lighting or roadies, but we knew that. We'll have to go looking once we get there. And there's loads of flats, Francis. Hundreds."
"Can we afford any of them?"
"Yeah, we can. It won't even matter if we can't get jobs straight away. What we've got saved would be enough for the deposit, and we can manage a shite place just on the dole. It'll be pretty shite now. Just a bedsit, and we might have to share a bath with a few others. But at least we wouldn't be wasting our money on a hostel any longer than we have to."
I said, "I'll share a Jackson, a kitchen, and everything else, no probs. I just want us out of the hostel as fast as we can. It's stupid to live in bloody separate dorms when..."
Rosie was smiling back at me, and the glow in her eyes nearly stopped my heart. She said, "When we could have a place of our own."
"Yeah," I said, "a place of our own."
That was what I wanted. A bed where Rosie and I could sleep through the night in each other's arms, wake up in the morning wrapped together. I would have given anything, anything at all, just for that. Everything else the world had to offer was gravy. I listen to the things people want out of love these days, and they blow my mind. I go to the pub with the boys from the squad and listen while they explain with minute precision exactly what shape a woman should be, what bits she should shave, how, what acts she should perform on which date, and what she should always or never do or say or want. I eavesdrop on women in cafes while they reel off lists of which jobs a man is allowed, which cars, which labels, which flowers and restaurants and gemstones get the stamp of approval, and I want to shout, "Are you people out of your tiny minds?" I never once bought Rosie flowers. Too hard for her to explain at home. And I never once wondered whether her ankles looked exactly the way they were supposed to. I wanted her. All mine, and I believed she wanted me. Till the day Holly was born, nothing in my life has ever been so simple. Rosie said, "Some of the flats won't want Irish." I said, "Fuck 'em." That tide was building, getting stronger. I knew that the first flat we walked into would be the perfect one, that this magnet pull would draw us straight to our home. "We'll tell them we're from Outer Mongolia. How's your Mongolian accent?" She grinned. "Who needs an accent? We speak Irish and say it's out of Mongolian. You think they'll know the difference?" I did a fancy bow and said, "Pog Mahone. Kiss my arse." About 90% of my Irish. "Ancient Mongolian greeting." Rosie said, "Seriously, but I'm only saying it because I know what you're like for patience. If we don't get a flat the first day, it's not a big deal, right? We've got loads of time." I said, "I know. Some of them won't want us because they'll think we're drunks or terrorists, and some of them..." I took her hands off her pint and ran my thumbs across her fingers, strong, calloused from the sewing, cheap street stall silver rings shaped like Celtic swirls and cat's heads. "Some of them won't want us because we'll be living in sin." Rosie shrugged. "Fuck them too." "If you wanted," I said, "we could pretend. Get goldy-looking rings, call ourselves Mr. and Mrs. Just until..." She shook her head, instantly and hard. "No, no way. It'd only be for a little while, till we've got the money to do it for real. It'll make our lives a whole lot easier."
Doesn't matter. I'm not faking that. Either you're married or you're not. It's not about what people think.
Rosie, I said, and tightened my hold on her hands. You know we'll do it, don't you? You know I want to marry you. There's nothing I want more.
That got the beginnings of a grin.
You'd better. Back when you and me started going out, I was a good girl, like the nuns taught me.
And now here's me all ready to be your fancy woman.
I'm serious. Listen to me. There's plenty of people who, if they knew, they'd say you were crazy. They'd say the Mackies are a share of scumbags, and I'm going to take what I want off you and then leave you high and dry with a baby on your hands and your life flushed down the jacks.
Not a chance. It's England. They've got Johnnies.
I said, I just want you to know you won't regret this. Not if I can help it. I swear to God.
Rosie said gently, I know that, Francis.
I'm not my da.
If I thought you were, I wouldn't be here. Now go up and get us a packet of crisps. I'm starving.
We stayed in O'Neill's that night till all the students had gone home and the barman started hoovering our feet. We stretched every pint as long as we could. We talked about safe, easy, everyday stuff. We made each other laugh.
Before we walked home, separately, in case anyone spotted us, me keeping an eye on Rosie from a safe distance behind, we kissed goodnight for a long time, up against the back wall of Trinity. Then we stood still, wrapped around each other, pressed together from cheeks to toes. The air was so cold that it made a high, fine, ringing sound somewhere miles above us, like breaking crystal. Her breath was hoarse and warm on my throat. Her hair smelled like lemon drops, and I could feel the fast shake of her heart trembling against my ribs. Then I let go of her and watched her walk away, one last time. Of course I looked for her. The first time I was left alone with her police computer, I ran her name and birth date through it. She had never been arrested in the Republic of Ireland. This was hardly a revelation. I hadn't expected her to turn into Ma Barker. But I spent the rest of the day on a hard, edgy high, just from inching that first step along her trail. As my contacts got better, so did my searches. She hadn't been arrested in the North, hadn't been arrested in England or Scotland or Wales or the USA, hadn't signed on the dole anywhere, hadn't applied for a passport, hadn't died, hadn't got married. I repeated all the searches every couple of years, sticking to contacts who owed me favours. They never asked. Mostly these days, I got mellower after Holly came along. I hoped Rosie would turn up under the radar somewhere, living one of those straightforward, contented lives that never hit the system. Remembering me every now and then with a piercing little tug, as the one who might have been. Sometimes, I pictured her finding me, the phone ringing in the middle of the night, the tap at my office door. I pictured us side by side on a bench in some green park, watching in a bittersweet silence while Holly swung on a climbing frame with two little red-headed boys. I pictured an endless evening in some dim pub, our heads bending closer and closer under the talk and laughter as the night got later, our fingers sliding towards each other on the battered wood of the table. I pictured every inch of what she would look like now, the crow's feet from smiles I hadn't seen, the softness of her belly from kids who weren't mine, all her life that I had missed, written on her body in braille for my hands to read. I pictured her giving me answers I had never thought of, the ones that would make sense of everything, send every jagged edge sliding smoothly into place. I pictured, believe it or not, a second chance. Other nights, even after all this time, I still wanted what I wanted when I was 20, to see her show up as some domestic violence squad's frequent flyer in someone's hooker file flagged for HIV, as an overdose in the morgue in a ruthless part of London. I had read the descriptions of hundreds of Jane Does over the years. All my signposts had gone up in one blinding, dizzying explosion. My second chances, my revenge, my nice, thick, anti-family Maginot line. Rosie Daly dumping my sorry ass had been my landmark, huge and solid as a mountain. Now it was flickering, like a mirage, and the landscape kept shifting around it, turning itself inside out and backwards. None of the scenery looked familiar anymore. I ordered another pint with a double Jameson's on the side, which, as far as I could see, was my only chance of making it to the morning. I couldn't think of a single other thing that would wipe my mind clean of that image. The nightmare made of slimy brown bones curled in its burrow, trickles of earth falling onto it, with a sound like tiny, scurrying feet.
Chapter 7. They gave me a couple of hours on my own, with a kind of delicacy I hadn't expected, before they came looking for me. Kevin showed up first, sticking his head round the door like a kid on a hide-and-seek mission, sending a quick, sly text while the barman pulled his pint, hovering and shuffling beside my table till I put him out of his misery and gestured for him to sit down. We didn't talk. It took the girls about 3 minutes to join us, shaking rain off their coats and giggling and shooting sideways glances around the pub. "Jesus," Jackie said, in what she thought was a whisper, pulling off her scarf. "I remember when we used to be dying to come in here, only because there was no girls allowed. We were better off, weren't we?" Carmel gave the seat a suspicious look and a quick swipe with a tissue before she sat down. "Thank God Mammy didn't come after all. This place had put the heart crossways in her."
"Christ," Kevin said, his head jerking up.
"Ma was going to come.
She's worried about Francis.
Dying to pick his brains, more like. She's not going to follow you or anything, is she?"
"Wouldn't put it past her," Jackie said.
"Secret agent, Ma."
"She won't. I told her you were gone home," Carmel said to me, fingertips over her mouth between guilty and mischievous. "God forgive me."
"You're a genius," Kevin said, heartfelt, slumping back into his seat.
"He's right. She'd only have wrecked all our heads." Jackie craned her neck, trying to catch the barman's eye.
"Will I get served in here these days, will I?"
"I'll go up," Kevin said. "What'll you have?"
"Get us a gin and tonic."
Carmel pulled up her stool to the table.
"Will they have a baby sham, do you think?" "Ah, Jesus, Carmel. I can't drink the strong stuff, you know I can't. I'm not going up there and asking for a poxy baby sham. I'll get the crap kicked out of me."
"You'll be grand," I said. "It's 1980 in here anyway. They've probably got a whole crate of baby sham behind the bar.
And a baseball bat for any guy who asks for it."
"I'll go."
"There, Shay, now." Jackie half stood up and flapped a hand to get his attention. "He can go, sure. He's up already."
Kevin said,
"Who invited him?"
"I did," Carmel told him. "And the pair of yous can act your age and be civil to each other for once. This evening's about Francis, not about you."
"I'll drink to that," I said.
I was pleasantly pissed, just heading into the stage where everything looked colourful and soft-edged, and nothing, not even the sight of Shay, could grate on me. Normally, the first hint of the warm fuzzies makes me switch to coffee, fast. That night, I intended to enjoy every second of them. Shay lounged over to our corner, running a hand through his hair to get rid of the raindrops.
"I'd never have guessed this place was up to your standards," he said to me. "You brought your cop mate in here."
It was heartwarming. Everyone welcomed him like a brother.
"I'd have paid to watch that. What are you drinking?"
"Are you buying?"
"Why not?"
"Sweet," I said.
"Guinness for me and Kevin. Jackie'll have a G&T. And Carmel wants a baby sham." Jackie said,
"We just want to see you go up and order it."
"No problem to me. Watch and learn."
Shay headed up to the bar, got the barman's attention with an ease that said this was his local, and waved the bottle of baby sham at us triumphantly. Jackie said,
"Bleeding show-off."
Shay came back, balancing all the glasses at once with a precision that goes with plenty of practice.
"So," he said, putting them down on the table. "Tell us, Francis, was that your ma that all this fuss is about?"
And when everyone froze,
"Cop on, will yous? You're all gagging to ask him the same thing. Was it, Francis?"
Carmel said in her best mammy voice. Leave Francis alone. I told Kevin and I'm telling you, you're to behave yourselves tonight.
Shay laughed and pulled up a stool. I'd had plenty of time during the last couple of hours, while my brain was still mainly unpickled, to consider exactly how much I wanted to share with the place, or anyway with my family, which amounted to pretty much the same thing. It's all right, Melly, I said. Nothing's definite yet, but yeah, it's looking like that was probably Rosie. A quick suck of breath from Jackie, and then silence. Shay let out a long, low whistle.
God rest, Carmel said softly. She and Jackie crossed themselves. That's what your man told the dailies, Jackie said. That fella you were talking to. But you're... No one knew whether to believe him or not. Cops, you know. They'll say anything. Not you, like, but the rest of them. He could have just wanted us to think that was her.
How do they know? Kevin asked. He looked faintly sick. I said, they don't yet. They'll run tests.
Like DNA stuff?
I wouldn't know, Kev. Not my field.
Your field, Shay said, turning his glass between his fingers. I've been wondering. What is your field, exactly?
I said, this and that.
For obvious reasons, undercovers tend to tell civilians that we work in intellectual property rights, or whatever else sounds dull enough to nip the conversation in the bud. Jackie thinks I implement strategic personnel utilization solutions.
Kevin asked, can they tell, you know, what happened to her?
I opened my mouth, shut it again, shrugged, and took a long swig of my pint.
Did Kennedy not talk to the dailies about that?
Carmel said, with her mouth pursing up,
not a word. They begged him to tell them what happened to her, so they did, and he wouldn't say one word. Walked out and left them there to wonder.
Jackie was bolt upright with outrage. Even her hair looked like it had got taller.
Their own daughter, and he told them it was none of their business if she was murdered or not. I don't care if he's your mate, Francis. That's just dirty, that is.
Scorcher was making an even better first impression than I had expected.
I said, Kennedy's no mate of mine. He's just a little pox bottle I have to work with every now and then.
Shay said, I bet you're good enough mates that he told you what happened to Rosie.
I glanced around the pub. The conversations had cranked up a notch, not louder, but faster and more focused. The news had made it in at last. Nobody was looking at us, partly out of courtesy to Shay, and partly because this was the kind of pub where most people had had problems of their own, and understood the value of privacy.
I said, leaning forward on my elbows and keeping my voice down,
okay, this could get me fired, but the dailies deserve to know whatever we know. I need you to promise me it won't get back to Kennedy.
Shay was wearing a 1,000-watt skeptical stare, but the other three were right with me, nodding away proud as punch. Our Francis, after all these years, still a liberties boy first and a cop second, sure aren't we all great to be such a close-knit bunch.
That was what the girls would pass on to the rest of the neighbourhood, as the sauce to go with my little nuggets of tasty info. Francis is on our side.
I said, it looks a lot like someone killed her.
Carmel gasped and crossed herself again.
From Jackie, God bless us and save us.
Kevin was still looking pale.
He asked, how?
No news on that yet.
But they'll find out, right?
Probably. After all this time it could be tough, but the lab team knows what they're doing.
Like CSI?
Carmel was round-eyed.
Yep, I said, which would have given the useless tech an aneurysm. The Bureau all loathed CSI to the point of sputtering incoherence.
But which would make the owl one's day. Just like that.
Except not magic, Shay said dryly to his pint.
You'd be surprised. Those boys can find just about anything they set their sights on. Old blood spatter, tiny amounts of DNA, 100 different kinds of injury, you name it. And while they're figuring out what happened to her, Kennedy and his crew are going to be figuring out who happened it. They'll be talking to everyone who lived around here back then,
They'll want to know who she was close to, who she argued with, who liked her and who didn't and why, what she did every moment of the last few days of her life, if anyone noticed anything odd that night she went missing, if anyone noticed anyone else acting funny around then, or just after. They're going to be very bloody thorough, and they're going to take all the time they need. Anything, any tiny thing, could be crucial.
Holy Mother, Carmel breathed. It's just like the telly, isn't it? That's mad.
In pubs and kitchens and front rooms all around us, people were already talking, thinking back, dredging up old memories, comparing and contrasting, pooling them to come up with a million theories. In my neighbourhood, gossip is a competitive sport that's been raised to Olympic standard, and I never diss gossip. I revere it with all my heart. Like I told Scorch, info is ammo, and there was bound to be plenty of live ammo being tossed around, in with the dud stuff. I wanted all that good gossip to be focused on dredging up the live rounds, and I wanted to make very sure they would get back to me one way or another. If Scorcher had snubbed the dailies, he was going to have a hard time extracting any kind of info from anyone in a half-mile radius. And I wanted to know that if someone out there had something to worry about, he was going to be worrying hard. I said, "If I hear anything else that the dailies should know, I won't let them get left out of the loop." Jackie put out a hand and touched my wrist. She said,
"I'm so sorry, Francis. I was hoping it'd turn out to be something else. Some kind of mix-up. I don't know. Anything."
"That poor young one," Carmel said softly. "What age was she? 18?
I said, 19 and a bit.
"Ah, God. That's barely older than my Darren. And left on her own in that awful house all these years. Her parents going mad wondering where she was. And all the time."
Jackie said, "I never thought I'd say this, but thank God for your man, PJ Lavery."
"Let's hope," Kevin said.
He drained his pint. "Who's ready for another?"
"Might as well," said Jackie.
"What do you mean, let's hope?"
Kevin shrugged.
"Let's hope it turns out okay, is all I'm saying." "Jamie Mac, Kevin, how's it going to turn out okay? The poor girl's dead." "Sorry, Francis."
Shay said, "He means, let's hope the cops don't turn up anything that makes us all wish Lavery's boys had dumped that suitcase in a skip and let sleeping dogs lie."
"Like what?" Jackie demanded. "Kev."
Kevin shoved back his stool and said, with a sudden burst of authority,
"I've had this conversation right up to my tits, and Frank probably has too. I'm going to the bar. If you're still talking about this crap when I get back, I'm leaving you the drinks and I'm going home."
"Will you look at that," Shay said, one corner of his mouth lifting. "The mouse that roared.
Fair play to you, Kev.
You're dead right. We'll talk about Survivor. Now get us a pint." We got another round in, and then another. Hard rain gusted up against the windows, but the barman had the heating up high, and all the weather we got was the cold draught when the door opened. Carmel plucked up the courage to go to the bar and order half a dozen toasted sandwiches, and I realized that the last food I'd had was half of Ma's fry-up, and that I was starving. The ferocious kind of hunger where you could spear something and eat it warm. Shay and I took turns telling jokes that made G&T go down Jackie's nose and made Carmel squeak and smack our wrists once she got the punchlines. Kevin did a viciously accurate impression of Ma at Christmas dinner that sent us all into convulsions of hard, helpless, painful laughter.
"Stop!" Jackie gasped desperately, flapping a hand at him. "I swear to God my bladder won't take it. If you don't stop, I'll wet myself."
"She'll do it," I said, trying to get my breath back. "And you'll be the one that has to get a J-cloth and clean up." "I don't know what you're laughing about," Shay told me. "This Christmas, you'll be right there suffering with the rest of us."
"My bollocks. I'll be safe at home, drinking single malt and laughing every time I think about yous poor suckers."
"Just you wait, pal. Now that Ma's got her claws back into you, you think she'll let go with Christmas just around the corner? Miss her chance to make all of us miserable at once? Just you wait."
Wanna bet?
Shay held out his hand.
£50. You'll be sat across the table from me for Christmas dinner.
You're on, I said. We shook on it. His hand was dry and strong and calloused, and the grip flicked a spark of static between us. Neither of us flinched. Carmel said,
Do you know something, Francis? We said we wouldn't ask you, but I can't help it. Jackie, would you ever stop that? Don't be pinching me.
Jackie had got her bladder back under control and was giving Carmel the evil stare of doom. Carmel said with dignity,
If he doesn't want to talk about it, he can tell me himself so he can. Francis, why did you never come back before this?
I said, I was too scared that Ma would get the wooden spoon and beat the living shite out of me. Do you blame me?
Shay snorted.
Carmel said, Ah, seriously, but, Francis, why?
She and Kevin and even Jackie, who had asked this question a bunch of times and never got an answer, were gazing at me, tipsy and perplexed and even a little hurt. Shay was picking a fleck of something out of his pint.
I said, Let me ask you something. What would you die for?
Jesus, Kevin said. You're a barrel of laughs, aren't you?
I'll leave him, Jackie said. The day that's in it.
I said,
Da once told me he'd die for Ireland. Would you do that?
Kevin rolled his eyes.
Da's stuck in the '70s. No one thinks like that anymore.
Try it, for a second. Just for the crack, would you? He gave me a bemused look.
Like why?
Say, England invaded all over again. They couldn't be arsed.
If, Kev, stay with me here.
I dunno. I never thought about it.
That, Shay said, not too aggressively, aiming his pint at Kevin.
That right there. That's what has this country ruined.
Me? What did I do?
You and the rest like you. Your whole bloody generation. What do you care about only Rolexes and Hugo Boss? What else do you think about even?
Francis is right for once in his life.
You'll want to get yourself something you'd die for, pal.
For fuck's sake, Kevin said. What would you die for? Guinness? A good ride?
Shay shrugged.
Family.
What are you on about? Jackie demanded. You hate man dad's guts.
All five of us burst out laughing.
Carmel had to tip her head back and knuckle tears out of her eyes.
I do, Shay acknowledged. Yeah. But that's not the point.
Would you die for Ireland, yeah?
Kevin asked me.
He still sounded a little miffed.
I wouldn't me hole, I said,
which set everyone off again.
I was posted in Mayo for a while. Have yous ever been to Mayo, have yous? It's boggers, sheep and scenery. I'm not dying for that.
What then?
Like my man Shay says, I told Kev, waving my glass at Shay. That's not the point. The point is that I know.
I'd die for the kids, Carmel said. God forbid.
Jackie said,
I'd say I'd die for Gav, only if he really needed it, mind. Is this not terrible morbid, Francis? Would you not rather talk about something else?
I said, back in the day, I would have died for Rosie Daly. That's what I'm trying to tell yous.
There was silence.
Then Shay raised his glass.
Here's to everything we'd die for, he said. Cheers.
We clinked our glasses, took deep drinks and relaxed back into our seats.
I knew this might well be because I was about 9/10 hammered, but I was fucking delighted that they had come in, even Shay. More than that, I was grateful.
They might be a spectacularly messed up bunch, and what they felt about me was anyone's guess, but the four of them had dropped whatever they could have been doing this evening, put down their lives at a moment's notice, and come in here to walk me through this night. We fit together like pieces of a jigsaw. And that felt like a warm gold glow wrapped all around me, like I'd stumbled by some perfect accident into the right place. I was just sober enough not to try and put this into words.
Carmel leaned into me and said, almost shyly, When Donna was a baba, there was something went wrong with her kidneys. They thought she might need a transplant.
I told them straight off, not a bother on me, they could take both of mine. I didn't think twice. She was grand in the end, sure. And they'd only needed the one anyway, but I never forgot that. Do you know what I mean?
Yep, I said, smiling at her. I do.
Jackie said, Ah, she's lovely, Donna is. She's a wee dolt, always laughing. You'll have to meet her now, Francis.
Carmel told me,
I see you and Darren. Do you know that? I always did, from when he was a little young fella.
God help him, Jackie and I said together.
And now, in a good way, going to college like. He didn't get that off me or Trevor. We'd have been happy enough to see him go into the plumbing with his daddy. Nope. Darren came up with that all by himself. Never said a word to us. Just got all the course forms, decided what one he wanted, and worked like mad to get himself into the right leaving cert classes. Went after it, bullheaded, all on his own. Like yourself. I always used to wish I was like that.
For a second there, I thought I saw a wave of sadness rise up across her face. I remember you doing just fine when you wanted something, I said.
How about Trevor?
The sadness vanished, and I got a quick, mischievous snippet of a giggle that made her look like a girl again.
I did, didn't I? That dance, the first time I saw him. I took one look and I said to Louise Lacey, I said, that one's mine. And he was wearing them flares that were all the rage.
Jackie started to laugh.
Don't be making fun, you, Carmel told her. Your Gavin does be always in them raggedy old jeans. I like a fella that makes a bit of an effort. Trevor had a lovely little arse on him in the flare, so he did, and he smelled only gorgeous. What are yous two laughing at?
You brazen hussy, you, I said. Carmel took a prim sip of her baby sham.
I was not. Things were different back then. If you were mad about a fella, you'd sooner die than let him know. You had to make him do the chasing.
Jackie said,
Jesus, pride and bleeding prejudice. I asked Gavin out, so I did. I'm telling yous, it worked. Better than all this rubbish nowadays. Girls going to the clubs with no knickers on them. I got my fella, didn't I? Engaged on my 21st. Were you still here for that, Francis?
Just, I said. I left about 3 weeks after. I remember the engagement party. The two families squeezed into our front room. The mammies eyeing each other up like a pair of overweight pit bulls. Shay doing his big brother act and shooting Trevor the filthies. Trevor all Adam's apple and terrified bug eyes. Carmel flushed and triumphant and squeezed into a pink pleated horror that made her look like an inside-out fish. Back then, I was even more of an arrogant prick. I sat on the windowsill next to Trevor's piggy little brother, ignoring him and congratulating myself fervently on the fact that I was getting the hell out of Dodge and would never have an engagement party involving egg sandwiches. Careful what you wish for. Looking at the four of them around the pub table, I felt like I'd missed something in that night. Like an engagement party might have been, at least in the long run, something worth having.
I wore my pink, Carmel said with satisfaction. Everyone said I looked only smashing.
You did all right, I said, winking at her. If only you weren't my sister, I'd have fancied you myself.
She and Jackie squealed, Yuck, stop!
But I wasn't paying attention anymore. Down at their end of the table, Shay and Kevin had been having a chat of their own, and the defensive note in Kevin's voice had ratcheted up enough to make me tune in.
It's a job! What's wrong with it?
A job where you work your guts out licking yuppie arse. Yes, sir. No, sir. 3 bags full, sir. And all for the good of some fat corporation that'll throw you to the wolves as soon as the going gets tough. You make thousands a week for them, and what do you get out of it?
I get paid. Next summer, I'm going to Australia. I'm going to snorkel around the Great Barrier Reef and eat Skippy burgers and get pissed at barbecues in Bondi Beach with gorgeous Aussie babes because of that job. What's not to love?
Shay laughed, a short scrape.
Better save your money.
Kevin shrugged.
Plenty more where that came from.
There isn't me arse. That's what they want you to believe.
Who? What are you on about?
Times are changing, pal. Why do you think PJ Lavery...
Fucking bogger,
all of us said in unison, except Carmel, who, now that she was a mammy, said, "Fecking bogger."
"Why do you think he's gutting those houses?"
"Who cares?" Kevin was getting irritated.
"You should bloody well care. He's a cute hoor, Lavery. He knows what way the wind's blowing. He buys those three houses last year for top whack. Sends out all those pretty brochures about quaint luxury apartments. And now, all of a sudden, he's dropping the whole idea and stripping them for parts."
"So what? Maybe he's getting a divorce or having tax hassle or something. How's that my problem?"
Shay stared Kevin out of it for another moment, leaning forward, elbows on the table. Then he laughed again and shook his head.
"You don't get it, do you?" he said, reaching for his pint. "You don't have a fucking clue. You swallow every bit of shite you're fed. You think it'll be all sunshine and roses forever. I can't wait to see your face."
Jackie said, "You're pissed."
Kevin and Shay never did like each other very much, but there were whole layers here that I was missing. It was like listening to the radio through stiff static. I could pick up just enough to catch the tone, not enough to know what was going on. I couldn't tell whether the interference came from 22 years or 8 pints. I kept my mouth shut and my eyes open. Shay brought his glass down with a flat crack.
"I'll tell you why Lavery's not wasting his cash on fancy apartments. By the time he'd have them built, no one will have the money to buy them off him. This country's about to go down the tubes. It's at the top of the cliff, and it's about to go over at 100 an hour.
"So, no apartments," Kev said, shrugging. "Big deal. They'd only have given Ma more yuppies to bitch about."
"Yuppies are your bread and butter, pal. When they become extinct, so do you. Who's gonna buy big dick tellies once they're all on the dole? How well does a rent boy live if the Johns go broke?"
Jackie smacked Shay's arm. "I hear you, that's disgusting, that is."
Carmel put up a hand to screen her face and mouthed "drunk" at me, extravagantly and apologetically, but she had had 3 baby shams herself, and she used the wrong hand. Shay ignored both of them.
"This country's built on nothing but bullshit and good PR. One kick and it'll fall apart, and the kick's coming."
"I don't know what you're so pleased about," Kevin said sulkily. He was a little worse for wear, too, but instead of making him aggressive, it had turned him inwards.
He was slouched over the table, staring moodily into his glass.
"If there's a crash, you're going to go down with all the rest of us."
Shay shook his head, grinning.
"Ah, no, no, no. Sorry, man. No such luck. I've got a plan."
"You always do. And how far have any of them ever got you?"
Jackie sighed noisily.
"Lovely weather we're having," she said to me.
Shay told Kevin,
"This time's different."
"Sure it is.
You watch, pal. Just you watch."
"That sounds lovely," Carmel said firmly, like a hostess hauling her dinner party back under control.
She'd pulled her stool up to the table and was sitting very straight, a ladylike pinky lifted off her glass.
"Would you not tell us about it?"
After a moment, Shay's eyes moved to her, and he leaned back in his seat and started to laugh.
"Ah, Melly," he said, "you always were the only one could put manners on me. Do you's lot know, when I was a great lump of a teenager, our Carmel slapped me around the back of the legs till I ran, because I called Tracy Long a slut."
"You deserved it," Carmel said primly. "That's no way to talk about a girl."
"I did. The rest of this shower don't appreciate you, Melly, but I do. Stick with me, girl. We'll go places."
"Where?" said Kevin. "The dole office."
Shay shifted his focus back to Kevin, with an effort.
"Here's what they don't tell you," he said. "In boom times, all the big chances go to the big fish. The working man can make a living, but it's only the rich who can get richer."
Jackie asked, "Could the working man not enjoy his pint and have a nice chat with his brothers and sisters, no?"
"When things start going bust, that's when everyone with a brain and a plan can pick up a big old handful of the pieces. And I've got those,"
Hot day tonight, Shea used to say, crouching to slick back his hair in the mirror. But he'd never let on with who. Or, made a few extra shekels, Melly. Get yourself and Jackie an ice cream. But you never knew where the money had come from. I said, so you keep telling us. Are you going to put out, or are you just going to keep cock-teasing all night long? Shea stared at me. I gave him a big, innocent smile.
Francis, he said. Our man on the inside. Our man in the system. Why would you care what a renegade like me does with himself?
Brotherly love.
More like you think it'll be crap, and you want that nice, warm feeling that you've beaten me again. Try this on for size. I'm buying the bike shop.
Just saying it brought a faint red flush onto his cheekbones. Kevin snorted. Jackie's high-up eyebrows shot up even farther.
Fair play to you, she said. Our Shea, the entrepreneur, what?
Nice one, I said. When you're the Donald Trump of the bike world, I'll come to you for my BMXs.
Conahee's retiring next year, and his son wants nothing to do with the business. He sells flash cars, bikes aren't good enough for him. So Conahee gave me first refusal.
Kevin had surfaced from his sulk enough to look up from his pint. He asked, where are you going to get the dosh? The hot glitter in Shay's eyes made me see what girls saw in him.
I've got half of it already. I've been saving up for this for a long time. The bank's given me the rest. They're tightening up on the loans. They know there's trouble ahead, same as Lavery does. But I got in there just in time. This time next year, lads, I'll be a man of independent means.
Carmel said, well done.
But there was something in her voice that caught my ear, something like reserve.
Ah, that's great altogether. Well done.
Shea took a swig of his pint and tried to play it cool, but there was a grin pressing at the corners of his mouth.
Like I told Kev, there's no point spending your life working to fill someone else's pockets. The only way to get anywhere is to be your own boss man. I'm just putting my money where my mouth is.
So,
Kevin asked, if you're actually right and the country's going down the tubes or whatever, you're still going with it.
That's where you're wrong, mate. When this week's rich pricks find out they're in the shit, that's when I get my chance. Back in the 80s, when no one we knew had the money for a car, how did we get around? On bikes. As soon as the bubble bursts, Daddy's not going to be able to buy his little darlings BMWs to drive the half mile to school anymore. That's when they show up at my door. I can't wait to see their faces on the little cunts.
Whatever, Kevin said. That's lovely, that is, really.
He went back to staring into his pint.
Carmel said, will it not mean living above this shop?
Shay's eyes went to her, and something complicated passed between them.
It will. Yeah.
And working full time. Your hours won't be flexible anymore.
Melly, Shea said, much more gently. It'll be all right. Conahee's not retiring for a few months yet. By that time...
Carmel took a tiny breath and nodded, like she was bracing for something.
Right,
she said almost to herself, and lifted her glass to her lips.
I'm telling you, don't be worrying.
Ah, no, you're grand. God knows you deserve your chance. The way you've been the last while, sure, I knew you'd something up your sleeve. I just didn't. I'm delighted for you. Congratulations.
Carmel, Shay said, look at me. Will I do that to you?
Here, Jackie said. What's the story?
Shay put a finger on Carmel's glass and moved it down so he could see her face. I'd never seen him tender before, and I found it even less soothing than Carmel did.
Listen to me. All the doctors said there's only a few months in it. 6, max. By the time I buy, he'll be in a home or in a chair, or anyway too weak to do any damage.
God forgive us, Carmel said softly. Hoping for...
I said, what's going on? They turned to stare at me. Two identical pairs of expressionless blue eyes. It was the first time I'd seen them look alike. I said, are you telling me Da still hits Ma?
A fast twitch like an electric shock went around the table, a tiny hiss of indrawn breath.
"You mind your business," Shay said, "and we'll mind ours."
"Who elected you, Spokes Gobshite?"
Karma said, "We'd rather there was someone around is all, in case Da has a fall."
I said, "Jackie told me that it stopped, years back."
Shay said, "Like I told you, Jackie hasn't a clue. None of yous lot ever did, so fuck off out of it."
I said, "Do you know something? I'm getting just a tiny bit sick of your acting like you're the only one who ever had to take Da's shit."
Nobody was breathing. Shay laughed, a low, ugly sound. He said,
"You think you took shit from him?"
"I've got the scars to prove it. You and me lived in the same house, mate, remember? The only difference is that me, now I'm a big boy, I can go an entire conversation without whinging about it."
"You took fuck all, pal. Sweet fuck all. And we didn't live in the same house, not for a single day. You lived in the lap of luxury, you and Jackie and Kevin, compared to what me and Carmel got."
I said, "Don't you ever tell me I got off easy."
Carmel was trying to look daggers at Shay, but he didn't notice. His eyes were fixed on me.
"Spoiled rotten, the whole bloody three of yous. You think you had it bad. That's because we made sure you never found out what bad was like.
If you want to go ask the barman for a tape measure," I said, "we can compare scar sizes or dick sizes or whatever the hell has your knickers in or not. Otherwise, we'll have a much nicer night if you keep the martyr complex on your own side of the table and don't try to tell me what my life's been like."
"Cute. You always did think you were smarter than the rest of us, didn't you?"
"Only than you, Sunshine. I just go with the evidence."
"What makes you any smarter? Just because me and Camel were out of school the second we turned 16? Did you think that was because we were too thick to stay?"
Shay was leaning forward, hands clenched on the edge of the table, and there was a patchy, fever-red flush coming up his cheekbones.
"It was so we'd be putting our wages on the table when Da wasn't. So you could eat. So the three of you could buy your school books and your little uniforms and get your leaving certs."
"Christ," Kevin muttered to his pint.
"And he's off. Without me, you wouldn't be a cop today. You'd be nothing. You thought I was just mouthing off when I said I'd die for family. I damn near did. I lost my education. I gave up every chance I had."
I raised one eyebrow. "Because otherwise you'd have been a college professor."
"Don't give me the giggles. You lost bugger all." "I'll never know what I lost." "What did you ever give up? What did this family ever take off you? Name me one thing. One."
I said,
"This fucking family lost me Rosie Daly."
Absolute, frozen silence. The others were all staring at me. Jackie had her glass raised and her mouth half open, caught in mid-sip. I realized slowly that I was on my feet, swaying a little, and that my voice had been right on the edge of a roar. I said,
"Leaving school is nothing. A few slaps are nothing. I'd have taken all that, begged for it sooner than lose Rosie. And she's gone!"
Carmel said, in a flat, stunned voice, "You think she left you because of us?"
I knew there was something wrong with what I had said, something that had shifted, but I couldn't put my finger on it. As soon as I stood up, the booze had hit me right in the backs of the knees. I said,
"What the hell do you think happened, Carmel? One day we were mad about each other. True love forever and ever, amen. We were going to get married. We had the tickets bought. I swear to God, we would have done anything, Melly, anything, anything in this wide world to be together. The next day, the next bloody day, she ran off on me."
The regulars were starting to glance over, conversations falling away, but I couldn't get my voice back down. I always have the coolest head in any fight, and the lowest blood alcohol level in any pub. This evening was way off course, and it was much too late to salvage it.
"What's the only thing that changed in between? Da went on a bender and tried to break into the Daly's gaff at 2 in the morning, and then the whole classy bunch of yous had a scream and knock-down, drag-out row in the middle of the street. You remember that night, Melly? The whole place remembers that night.
Why wouldn't Rosie back out after that?